This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, February 8th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On this edition of Ozarks, two sides of Valentine's Day. On the 13th, there will be a sort of anti-Valentine's night of stories and music. And the next night, Still on the Hill will celebrate their new CD of love songs. We'll have previews of both.
And in just a moment, the Byzantine rules of eminent domain and why cities and individuals don't always see eye to eye.
Support for KUAF comes from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 31st Season of Entertainment, which presents Come Fly Away on Monday, February 13th at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center. This Broadway musical combines the vocals of Frank Sinatra and the creative vision of dance choreographer Twyla Tharp. Tickets and more information available at uafortsmith.edu.
A group of property owners living in South Fayetteville are raising concerns about how the city decides fair market compensation for public works property easements on their land. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich looked into the story, and she files this report.
City of Fayetteville's fixing up Cato Springs Road on the southern edge of town, the narrow two-lane street, which connects U.S. Highway 71 to Razorback Road, with steep dirt ditches on either side, had seen better days. But with a sprawling new university research park just east of here, the Cato Springs Road corridor, like many around northwest Arkansas, is being improved. Former Fayetteville Police Chief Richard Watson, who worked for the city for 35 years, built a 1,200-square-foot home on the corner of Cato Springs Road and Klein Streets 40 years ago.
It's unsettling to have someone come in, take away many feet of your property or however much it is, several hundred feet, and offer you a ridiculous amount.
The long, narrow parcel next to Cato Springs Road, which will hold telephone, water, and gas lines, comes within 10 feet of his house. It will also be restricted. Watson said he was fairly compensated for a property right-of-way to expand the road, but really had to struggle to get reasonable value for the general utility easement.
I think the city engineer needs to have his tail end jerked up and made to deal with the city's people on a lot better and more friendly basis.
The city of Fayetteville declined talking on the record, but Watson claimed it took many phone calls to get answers. In the end, he had to hire an attorney to represent his interests and ended up settling out of court. David Druding's also upset. He owns Summercorn Foods, a now-shuttered packaged soy foods factory on Cato Springs Road on the corner of Vale Street, the amber-colored adobe complex built in 1991. With its signature hand-carved wooden front door was designed by architect Albert Skiles. Although the building is currently used as storage, Druding remains protective of the place, historically the site of a busy 19th century train depot and cafe.
The area that we're standing right now has been called historically the Fayette Junction area of Fayetteville.
The only thing that remains from that era is a 133-year-old cottonwood tree, which shades the Summercorn building. When Druding learned several years back the city planned to dig an 8-foot-deep trench easement on his property close to the tree, he staged a campaign to stop it. The trench was moved further south. Druding's among 37 residents and businesses along Cato Springs Road who received notification from the city of Fayetteville to secure right-of-ways, permanent and general utility easements, as well as temporary construction easements. Most have struck some sort of agreement with the city of Fayetteville, except David Druding. He's itching for a fight, but not initially.
The total square footage that the city was requiring for this project was a little over 4,000 square feet. The majority of it was for the general utility easement, is how it's worded in the offer letter. For that that part of the property, they were not offering what they call full appraisal value. They were offering a percentage of the appraisal value, which at that point, you know, I have no knowledge or background, and I thought, well, okay, that's the way it's done. And I believe they offered me 33%. I've now found that it's often 25%.
Like former police chief Watson, David Druding said he was offered full appraisal value for a road improvement right-of-way, but much less for a general utility easement. after consulting with several land use attorneys who told him that's not how other Northwest Arkansas cities do business, he declined the deal.
The city of Fayetteville should not be the only city that does not offer full market value compensation to its impacted property owners.
Fayetteville City Attorney Kit Williams declined an interview because the city's taking action against David Druding. But in a response to an email query for this story, Mike Bender, Public Works Director for the City of Bentonville, replied that it's typical for easement compensation to be valued at 25% to 35% of full market value, precisely because the owner retains full ownership and use of the property. One other municipal attorney, however, who declined being identified for this report, did say on the record they don't discount easements, choosing instead to pay full market value. And that leaves the city of Springdale. Springdale City Attorney Jeff Harper.
There's no law in Arkansas that says that you have to give full value. But we've even had a judge that said it was his opinion. Now, it didn't go to court, you know, but it was his opinion that it would be full value. And when we have land appraised, we have an appraiser go out, and I've looked at and reviewed a number of his appraisals, and usually he leaves a value that the land is still worth to the owner. In other words, taking the general utility easement definitely constitutes damages, but usually he says because they're left with the use of the property, that it's not 100% compensation. We have settled several cases by giving full value for the utility easement. So I would say we don't have a definite practice on the value. It's just basically negotiable.
But rarely as low as 25%, Harper said. Still, a growing number of vocal property owners, like David Druding, claim the city of Fayetteville purposely discounts general utility easements.
What I really want, and which I don't think until it's more than just me requesting it, I want the city to change their procedure when they are entering into eminent domain condemnation with property owners. I want them to offer the same thing that other cities do, and I want them to offer just compensation for the property that's being taken. And I do not believe that they are doing that presently.
As for former police chief Richard Watson, he ended up settling with the city of Fayetteville.
And I had to hire an attorney, had to hire an appraiser, and these are expensive whether you've gotten that business or not. The city ultimately, after we furnished an appraisal of what the property is really worth, they had to pay more than twice the amount just to get me to settle with them that they initially offered.
That's because in Arkansas, property rights are almost a sacred thing.
In fact, our laws have been cited nationally, and our constitutional provisions cited nationally as being some of the most protective for private property owners.
Mark Hayes, general counsel for the Arkansas Municipal League, says it's written into our Constitution.
Effectively, what it says is that private property rights are above all others in the state. And that is an amazing proclamation in the law, and it gives private property owners huge protection in this state that you won't find in other states.
But when it comes to municipal utility easements, there apparently is no clear formula in Arkansas.
My understanding of the law is that each one of those things gets looked at very specifically as related to the circumstances it's in.
So what it boils down to is if a property loses or gains value because of a municipal project, how it ends up being restricted, and a city's preferred easement formula. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
A citizens' forum on municipal eminent domain in Northwest Arkansas will be held Thursday, February 9th at 6:30 p.m. in the Ann Henry Boardroom of the Fayetteville Public Library. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Kathy McGregor and Michael Drager, the media and community outreach person from Seven Hills.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for coming in. Now, you're here to talk to me about this anti-Valentine's Day fundraiser, Love Gone Bad?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the correct name?
That's right. Love Gone Bad Stories, Love Gone Bad Songs.
Excellent. Now, how did this idea come about?
Well, being a single person, a long time ago, I thought there should be an anti-Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. It was the folks at Seven Hills that helped me figure out that that day is actually officially now February 13th.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I've done this show as a fundraiser before where I just moved here recently from Memphis. And mm-hmm. so we've had a lot of success with it as a fundraiser in Memphis. So we thought we would do it here for Seven Hills.
And is the idea to bash Valentine's Day? Like, what is the idea
not
here?
Not so much bash, because that's negative stuff. It's just more to poke fun at relationships and love and all the quirky things and things that can go wrong with relationships.
That's right, because for as good as love is, as bad as love is.
There you go.
So it's kind of fun. It's just an alternative, lighthearted event and fundraiser with Kathy sharing her stories, and then Andy Cohen playing some music. So,
both of you, I'm going to ask you this question. I mean, how do you feel personally about Valentine's Day? Are we against it?
Not against it, but my wife and I try to do it, take care of each other on a daily basis. So Valentine's Day is just another day. We don't really do anything special.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We try to do it on a day-to-day basis. So,
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And I just always make sure that I'm not going out to dinner on Valentine's night because
it's busy.
Hard to get a table.
Just practically.
And see all those people acting, you know, all mushy and, you know, weird.
All right. And the people that come out to listen to you guys, it will be benefiting Seven Hills.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always fun to see people come up with ideas to help us. Because we're obviously a nonprofit and we're always trying to raise money. And so when we can do a fun event that helps our cause, yeah, we're always interested in people like Kathy that join us in what we do.
And can you tell some of our listeners a little bit about what it is that you guys do?
Yeah. Seven Hills has been in Northwest Arkansas, Fayetteville, for about 10 years, a little over 10 years. And we work with the chronically homeless and those that are near homeless. And our whole mission is to fight that, to fight homelessness and poverty. And we try to do that with real-life education for our clients and offer them opportunities of hope and just try to end the cycle that they're in. And a lot of times homelessness is misunderstood. There's lots of stereotypes that go with that. And so we are always trying to educate people about the issues that surround homelessness and poverty. We deal with a lot of families. We roughly helped over 300 families this last year mm-hmm. That were homeless or near homeless. And so when you have a family that comes in that has kids and they're desperate, to be able to step in and change their course of direction is so satisfying, especially when you see that there's the potential that cycle is broken and those kids have a chance to make it. So we pride ourselves on being able to help people break the cycle and not just put a Band-Aid on it mm-hmm. and not just kind of, here's some food, but it's more than that. And so it may start with some compassionary services like at our day center where we serve over 100 clients a day. It might start with food and hygiene and taking care of laundry and that kind of thing. But our hope is always to move them past that immediate need into living a healthy life and being a productive person in the community. So we work really hard at that and involving our work with clients on a day-to-day basis. We have some great people, great case managers that invest their lives and their time in helping those clients change their course of direction. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what we do.
And this is a new fundraiser for you guys. You guys haven't done this before.
Nope, haven't done this before. This is the first annual, I guess, and hopefully it'll go off really well, which we think it will, just because it's quirky. It's different. And so if people can be aware of it and come and join us, and I'm assuming we're going to talk about dates and those kind of things. So
yes, it's, let's see, February 13th at 7:30.
That's right.
At St. Paul's Episcopal Church here in Fayetteville. And the pricing I saw on the flyer was pretty unique. You want to tell me about that?
That's right. It's going to be $15 a person or $5,000 a couple, in keeping with Anti-Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Several people have asked me about that. And I think we figured out, Michael, that we're not going to have any spies in the parking lot. So you don't have to come in separate cars. Just act like you don't know each other when you buy your ticket.
Which would go right along with the theme.
Yes.
Right.
So.
And if you sit next to each other, please don't hold hands.
In keeping with the spirit of the event.
Yeah. So we're going to have light hors d'oeuvres and drinks, and then just a good casual evening of some good storytelling and good music. So it'll be a good event.
And tickets are $15 a person or $5,000 a couple.
We like a lot of couples.
Yes.
It is a fundraiser after all.
It is a fundraiser. Absolutely.
And if people need more information or they want to get tickets, where can they do that?
They can purchase tickets at Seven Hills Homeless Center, which is located at 1555 West Martin Luther King Boulevard, right behind Sud's Car Wash. And also,
They can call 479-871-4875 to reserve tickets, or you can purchase them at the door.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Awesome.
You're
thank
welcome.
You
thank
us.
You.
And also during our conversation, Kathy McGregor shared one of her stories with us. You can hear the story in its entirety at OzarksAtLarge.com.
And to give you a sample of what Andy Cohen will sound like at the February 13th event, this is his version of The Glory of Love.
That's the story, that's the glory of love. You got to cry a little, sigh a little, let the clouds roll by, baby, little now. That's the story, that's the glory of love. Long as there's the two of us, with the world and all of its charms, before the world is through with us.
Earth, sky.
Somewhere around the planet, there's going to be a tree falling, and that will not be replaced. We lose a football field's worth of forest every 4 seconds.
You're listening to satellite researcher Alan Bellward of the European Commission's Joint Research Center. He's talking about deforestation, where forests are cleared for land to grow crops or raise cattle. In 2011, Dr. Bellward was part of the most comprehensive forest survey ever, which involved over 190 countries. He told Earth Sky that since 1990, the world has lost 180 million acres of forest.
Forests are an absolutely fundamental part of the climate system. I mean, deforestation accounts for about 12% of all anthropogenic emissions of carbon dioxide.
Anthropogenic changes are those caused by humans, and one key tool to seeing all changes to Earth's forests, said Bellward, is the U.S. Landsat program of satellites, which since 1972 have continuously and precisely monitored the world's forest cover. What's more, Landsat provides the data freely and openly to anyone in the world.
The Landsat provides us with a really quite detailed picture of the forest canopy. It's not just a photograph, it's actually measuring light outside the range of sensitivity of the human eye. And we're able to pick up subtle changes in the forest canopy.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. The University of Arkansas will host Nobel Peace Prize winner Elie Wiesel for a distinguished lecture next month. His book, Night, details the horrors of his time in Auschwitz concentration camp. His talk is scheduled for Wednesday, March 7th at the Walton Arts Center. It's free and open to the public. A 30-minute book signing will follow. Lawmakers are still working on ways to pay for 20 firefighting positions that the Joint Budget Committee recommends be restored to the Arkansas Forestry Commission. Yesterday, a personnel subcommittee of the Legislative Council looked at how the commission handled the layoffs. A Department of Finance and administrative official said they appeared to be handled properly. Representative Brian King of Green Forest is the co-chair of the committee that was asking the questions. He says he thinks State Forester John Shannon handled the layoffs as well as he could, but Representative King says the legislature should have been notified of the commission's budget problems earlier.
As I said earlier, I gave him credit. I mean, when he did discuss hiring freezes, He did discuss some of the things. There was, as always, where there's some decisions that he's made financially. You look back and think, you know, why did you make this decision? Why this? Could this not have been cut? I mean, obviously, you know that when you have this kind of shortfall, there's going to be tough decisions that have to be made.
The Forestry Commission had to lay off 34 employees last month after a $4 million budget shortfall.
Former gas company executive Sheffield Nelson is dismissing charges that his severance tax proposal would cause job losses in Arkansas. Opponents say the Nelson plan to increase Arkansas' severance tax on natural gas to 7% would make drilling companies leave the state for areas with lower rates. Nelson disagrees.
These people trot people out to make these comments, but in no case did you see an executive of any company say that they would leave Arkansas if the severance tax went up, or they'd leave Arkansas for any reason, because this is a gold mine. They are making money beyond belief. As the BHP executive VP said, the CEO over this area said, shallow wells, cheap wells, making a 16% rate of return because they can drill the wells so quickly, and they're in and they're out, and they've got gas production.
According to statistics from the Pittsburgh Chamber of Commerce and its alliance with other community development groups, if Arkansas increases the severance tax to 7%, there would still be nine other states with a higher severance tax burden for natural gas companies.
With a lawsuit pending over Arkansas's redistricting map, which a state senator says dilutes the black vote in his eastern Arkansas district, Secretary of State Mark Martin has hired former Congressman Asa Hutchinson to represent him. Martin, Governor Mike Beebe, and Attorney General Dustin McDaniel are being sued by State Senator Jack Crumbly. Hutchinson, who ran for governor in 2006, says he's just getting up to speed on the case and will present Secretary Martin's side in court.
We've just been brought to the case to represent the Secretary of State, Mark Martin. He was the dissenting voice in the Board of Apportionment as they approved the legislative redistricting plan. And therefore, he needed to have separate representation.
Secretary of State Martin voted against the redistricting map that's now being challenged. Governor Beebe and Attorney General McDaniel voted for it.
Arkansas State Senator Bruce Holland of Greenwood is pleading no contest on charges regarding the 18-mile high-speed chase he was in last January. Holland had appealed his conviction 5 months ago when he was found guilty of fleeing, improper passing, and careless driving. Holland had said he didn't notice the officer pursuing him, but Tuesday in court changed his tune. Prosecuting attorney Larry Jegley says Holland will serve 10 days of community service and says the original sentence of 10 weeks he believes was a miscalculation by the judge.
I'm also told that Senator Holland apologized to the people of Perry County, the sheriff's office, and the court, and I applaud him for that, and hopefully everybody can put this past.
Jegley says Holland was also fined $890, which he already paid.
The University of Arkansas men's basketball team will again try to win a game away from Bud Walton Arena. Arkansas faces Georgia tonight at 7 in Athens. The Razorbacks have dropped all seven of their contests not on their home floor this season.
KUAF is supported by Pays Interactive, a Northwest Arkansas-based company offering custom app design and programming for businesses and ideas of all sizes. Apps Farkle, WordShout, MyLists, and more available on the iTunes App Store under PAZE. PaysInteractive.com for more information. The 21st annual Mardi Gras celebration in Fayetteville begins on Friday, February 17th, and will run through Fat Tuesday, February 21st. Events include the Parade of Pearls, Fat Saturday Parade of Fools, the Funky Town Ball, and the Fat Tuesday crowning of the King and Queen at Sideways Bar on Dixon Street. An event schedule and more information are available online at FayettevilleMardiGras.com.
It is Wednesday, February 8th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Beckett-Martin. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You know, I had an ex-boyfriend tell me that I should really stop trying to make a point over and over and over. And it was fairly wise of him, but I'm going to make this point again.
Okay.
If you've never been on an Eagle Watch tour on Beaver Lake, mm-hmm. I'll give you the $20 for two of you to go. Don't say that.
No,
they'll
there
take
are thousands
me up on
of
it.
People listening to you right now.
Okay, I'll give you my really good advice.
There
better,
you go.
Better.
That you should go, and there's one this afternoon at 3 o'clock. All you have to do is call for reservation 789-5000, and then you go out to Rocky Branch Marina, and you get on a pontoon boat, and you cruise around the lake. And if it's nice weather, you get to see the sun. And apparently, if it's bad weather, you get to see eagles.
So it's a win-win.
Exactly. Or tonight, you can go to Willy Wonka Jr. at the Benton County School of the Arts Performing Arts Center at 7. Mm-hmm. Tickets are $7 to $12. Or if you're in the River Valley, you can go see Texas country troubadour Ray Wiley Hubbard at 7:30 at 2nd Street Live. Tickets are $20.
All right.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
There is no $20 guarantee. This is Ozarks at Large. As the duo Still on the Hill, Kelly Mulholland and Donna Stern have written songs inspired by the Ozarks, by peace, by buildings, and by legends. Now they have a 14-song CD that's full of love songs. Red Curtain includes 12 new original love songs, one song each by Irish balladeer John Spillane and Columbia, Missouri songwriter Lee Ruth. The debut performance of many of the songs will be When Else? Valentine's Night at Good Folk on Block Street in Fayetteville. Donna and Kelly are with me inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Copies of their new CD in hand. Welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Yay. Thank you so much, Kyle. Great to be here.
Yay. Love songs. I mean, if right, since we, as species, been putting together music, we've been writing love songs. So this seems natural.
It does, but it's maybe not so natural for us. I mean, we've had these songs in our repertoire for a long time, but or they've existed, I'd say.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the audience is going to be very shocked. Some people are going to be shocked because this album sounds absolutely nothing like our last album. And
it sounds like absolutely nothing you've ever done.
Well, that's true. It's, you know, the last album was very rootsy, very bluegrass, very banjo-oriented, you know, and Ozark oriented, mm-hmm. and we love that. But the fact is that Donna and I have lots of interest in music, and this is largely came from Donna's song. She has an enormous selection of love songs. She writes a Valentine's song for me every year, mm-hmm. like clockwork. Mm-hmm. And if not one, then two or three.
When he's extra nice, he might get a couple.
And since we've been together almost 16 years, we got a bunch of these, mm-hmm. and over 20. In her book, at least, and we had to sort through them. And so at least two-thirds of this album is comprised of these Valentine songs. And not many people have heard these because we don't have many. We've got way too many songs to be able to use them all in our repertoire.
Well, you mentioned that it doesn't sound like anything that's come before. And one reason, it's very lush. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of production. You guys played almost all the instruments yourselves. But this, I bet, took longer in studio than any of your previous.
Kelly loves to collage in the studio. That's really his amazing one of his many amazing gifts. And being that he has many musical backgrounds, classical as well, he likes to get in there and finger paint with tons mm-hmm. of instruments and collage.
Right, and when you know that's really not fashionable. People like you know to produce that heavily is not really the vogue of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, but I just basically ignored the vogue of the day when I approached this production. I decided basically to please myself. I decided to make it as beautiful as I could make it, mm-hmm. and that's you don't hear that very often. But that's the way I was thinking and. Actually, it does harken back to one other album, but it's not a Still on the Hill album. It's my solo album, which is called Never Ending Conversation, which was a collection of poems put to music. And for that album, I had kind of the same approach. It mm-hmm. had that lushness. It had the very thick production, lots of instrumentation such as pump organ, strings, recorders.
Saw.
Yeah, the saw. And no banjo.
Right.
100% banjo free.
It's interesting that you've been writing these since you guys have been together. I don't know how old either of you are, but if you go to your website and look at the bio, you figure you're neighborhood, right?
You can do the math.
Right.
Mid-50s.
Yeah, okay. And it's interesting because love songs, I think, if you write them, especially when they're being written for a person, not for commercial consumption. Love songs are different after your 40th birthday.
Oh.
Right? I mean, you're not singing necessarily about puppy love. You're talking about the space that one gives each other.
Nice.
That's
very
true.
Mature. Love's different after you've been together for a while.
This is not, that's true. When somebody thinks, when we say we have an album of love songs, some might jump to the conclusion that there's going to be little fluffy stuff mm-hmm. with little X's and O's, you know.
They call it. Puppy love.
And there's nothing wrong with those.
Yeah.
And they have their place. But no, we actually carefully chose songs. She has some of those. Mm-hmm. You know, we could have done that,
right?
But we didn't. We pretty much kept it to songs with more substance, more serious, more of a serious nature, and they are searching songs and about relationship and longing. It's
more. And staying together mm-hmm. and what that means,
mm-hmm. right?
Though there is some whimsy here.
Yeah,
I think of the Lee Roof song.
Yeah,
You Electrify Me.
Is out of order and your doorbell's on the blink. You do a circuit breaker running water in the sink, and there's feedback in your stereo, and lightning struck your aerial, and Thomas Alva Edison is crying from his grave, but he can't save us.
Lee Ruth is one of our heroes. He's a legend in Columbia, Missouri. Never left his little area. We did a house concert for Lee once in our house for about 22 people, and it was just a highlight for us to get to share this just brilliant songwriter with our friends.
Defines the dark, defying us to see. There's plastic grass laid in his yard. His tarnished breath, no spirits are.
Growing up, my father played the dulcimer, and we just called it the dulcimer.
Mm-hmm.
On here, it has a name, and I wonder if because this was a love, a CD of love songs, that you decided to go with the name Courting Dulcimer?
Well, that's a real instrument, and I got, Kelly, this Courting Dulcimer for Valentine's Day several years ago, and what it is, it's a dulcimer with two necks. One neck faces one direction, and the other faces the other direction, and in the Victorian days, a couple could go out maybe in the gazebo, and they could practice facing each other, and as long as the parents heard the two parts playing, they knew there was no hanky-panky going on. So we actually play it facing each other. Alone, I'm only random notes, fickle as fair weather. You bring me rhyme and live and dare, hold me all together. When our voices mix and marry, they become a song. No longer notes strung all apart, we become as one. So sing with me, my love, your sweetest harmony. Alone, I'm only half a song with you, a symphony.
There's a love song to the moon here. All these years that the moon has inspired other people to love each other, and you guys give it back to the moon here.
Aww.
That's one of my favorite songs Donna's written in quite a few years. That's hard to say because she writes so many, but that one really rose to the top for me. And just a little secret about that song. There's a song, the second song on there is by an Irish songwriter named John Spillane. And we heard somebody gave us a CD of his, and we took it home, and Donna and I listened to this song straight through together. And both of us,
the
whole CD, and both of us were just dumbstounded. We were dumbstruck. Mm-hmm. It was so good. The songwriting was so substantial, and it was kind of overwhelming. And I remember Donna said, I quit. I can't. This guy.
I'm never going to write another song.
He was so overwhelmed. She was overwhelmed. Well. The actual reality of it is that she went to bed overwhelmed. She got up at about 4 o'clock in the morning and she wrote the bright moon.
Yeah, there was a beautiful full moon that night.
And you can even though it's nothing like any particular song of John Spillane, I can hear that he inspired that song. I can hear that she just spoke right through him.
So when you play at Mike's at Good Folk on Valentine's Night, mm-hmm. February 14th, will we hear many of these songs?
I think we're going to play all but two of them.
Yeah.
And that's only because we just can't do them all.
Right.
The night is going to be a little different than our usual configuration. We're going to do a social hour with the great Walter Savage providing entertainment for the first hour. And we'll have refreshments and drinks and
champagne and chocolate.
And it'll be a very romantic evening. And then we'll start our concert, which will be one long set instead of two. And we're going to pack in, I think, all but two songs on the CD. And we are going to have Walter come up and collaborate on one. And then Jack Williams is going to play guitar on a couple songs as well.
My favorite song?
Oh, I'm curious.
The End.
Oh.
My favorite song is
really?
The End. Yes. You know, there's a lot of songs I love, but I think that was the most successful recording. I just love the way that sounds. And I love the song, too.
Well, to me, because it is a love song that is not about... Many love songs are about the possibility or the excitement of new love. And this is one that says, this is long haul. I want us to be there till the end. And I think that is the, you know, the most wonderful sort of love sentiment you can have.
It is. It's a classic song. I love it. That's one of the only songs on the album that has kind of a country sound. Or at least you can tell Donna's deep country roots. I was really pleased when we finished that song. It just, I just thought it really, it came off, you know. You never know when you recorded something whether it's going to cloud up by the time you're done with it or whether it's going to still have that clarity that you're hoping for. And that one I really felt good about.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Kyle.
What a pleasure.
Take a look and you will see all of the love inside of me. Then give me a kiss and I'll become your princess.
Donna Sterna and Kelly Mulholland are the duo still on the hill. The CD release concert for Red Curtain is Valentine's Night, February 14th, at Good Folk on Block Street in Fayetteville. Still on the Hill will also be on stage at the Lyric Theater in Harrison this Saturday night with Threepenny Acre. You can learn more about each concert at stillonthehill.com. And with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Sheldon Tucker, a cast member of the musical Bring It On. The production opened last night at Walton Arts Center, continues there through the weekend. Sheldon, welcome.
Thank you very much.
This is hardly the first time area audiences have had a chance to see you on stage. You were in Oklahoma at Rogersville Theater, Jekyll and Hyde the musical.
That is correct.
Footloose.
That is correct.
So this is a bug that's been with you for a while.
Yeah, it was a bug that disappeared for a little while in high school and college and then just randomly came back up and it's brought me back to Northwest Arkansas. So I'm very excited about it.
So what happened in high school and college?
I just kind of got busy with actually going to school in high school, and I was cheering, and then I cheered in college as well, and so just didn't do any theater, and then all of a sudden, cheerleading and theater combined with Bring It On the musical, and here I am.
Yeah, so, I mean, what are the odds? I mean, two of you, oh, that's fine, we're taping. I didn't even hear it. So what are the odds that two of these vocations, two of these loves for you come together, and not just come together, but come together at a point where you can be involved?
I can't even imagine them. Whenever I was in college and cheering, we started kind of hearing like chatter of them doing a musical from Bring It On, and all of us were just like, oh gosh, that has to be horrible. and then the director started talking to me and choreographer, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll look at it. And then I was like, okay, this is actually kind of legit. And all my friends were like, if you don't go to New York and do this, you're missing out something that's perfect for you. And then they announced the tour, and Walton Arts Center was on the list. And I think my jaw hit about 10 feet below the floor, and I was just shocked.
Now, I want to – if we drew a map of the trajectory of your career so far, of your life, it's Bentonville, Then I go far west to Hawaii Pacific, mm-hmm. where you cheered for the Sea Warriors.
Yes.
And then to New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of mileage. Why Hawaii Pacific?
I was choosing between there and Oklahoma State. Hawaii has one of the top cheer programs mm-hmm. in the nation. And I was lucky enough to get accepted on the team. And they have a pretty good scholarship program. And then also it's Hawaii. And they had my major. So I was like, okay, everything lines up.
January Stillwater, January Hawaii.
Right. There you go.
It was a hard decision.
I'm familiar with the movie. And in the movie, one of the main characters joins the cheer team because there isn't a gymnastics program at the school. Were you involved in gymnastics as a kid and then just did cheerleading?
Yes. I did gymnastics here in Fayetteville at the Williams Center, just okay. right down the street. And I did gymnastics from about 4 to 12, 13 growing up. And then stopped whenever I did some theater for a couple years and then went into cheering in high school. So I've hopped around a little bit.
And you've also been singing. Mm-hmm. You've had training. You were in musicals with Rogers Little Theater. So did the singing, if not on stage, did the singing for you continue?
It was pretty much just in the car or the shower. And then whenever I got this job, it was just kind of a crash course of how to start really doing some intense singing really quickly. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It definitely helped me being in choir. I did choir at Bentonville High School. And so I got to kind of bring all that stuff back whenever I started doing the musical.
Is it different physically for you if you're cheering on a football field, a basketball court, or on a stage?
Yes. lots of people compare the show to doing like a Nationals routine, which is very similar in the aspect of everyone's watching you and you have like your certain amount of time and this is what you have to do and you have to consistently do it and hit it. But then in theater, you have the aspect of, oh, you're singing while you're tumbling across the stage and you're singing while you're holding someone up. And then you have to do it for 2.5 hours opposed to, you know, 2.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then lighting is the fun one that we've encountered. Whenever you're tumbling, usually you just have normal fluorescent overhead lighting. But in our show, and if you get the chance to see our show, it's beautifully lit, but it's got a lot of lighting. And so whenever we started teching it, we found that, oh, well, we'd be tumbling, and then there's a light, and all of a sudden you can't see. And
oh.
So it's added a whole bunch of new elements of excitement to doing it on stage.
That's a good word for it,
yeah.
Excitement. What kind of training do you have to do then? I mean, because singing on its own seems difficult. Tumbling seems difficult. So then tumbling and singing at the same time, I mean, how do you even prepare for that?
Prepping, all of us did a lot of cardio, a lot of
yeah.
running and singing through the show during rehearsals on the treadmill. And that was how I practiced my music outside of rehearsals is I'd go to the gym and just like start running on the treadmill and then start singing to build up the cardio.
Did that ever surprise someone who was on the treadmill next to you?
I did it in the privacy
okay.
of my own home.
There
okay.
you go.
Are you ever upside down in singing?
Yes.
Kyle has this pained look on his face.
How in the – because here's – I would think that if you're upside down, your brain has to be thinking, I'm upside down. I have to land on my feet. But then you're still singing.
It's, multitasking.
Yeah. It seems like a young person's role.
Yes, we have a fairly young cast. One of my good friends in the show, she has self-titled herself Grandma. She's the oldest girl in the cast by a couple years, and she's still mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So what is it like not just to be part of this touring show that has, by all accounts, a bright future ahead of it, a big future, but to come back home and do this?
It's so exciting. I didn't really think I knew how excited I'd get until like Sunday, whenever I started packing to come here, we were in Houston before this. And I started getting all excited. And I was like, I haven't been so excited to be in Bentonville for a long time because usually I'm just coming to visit my family. And not that I don't get excited to see them.
No, but, all understood, yes.
No, I'm really excited. I'm getting to see a whole bunch of good old friends. And just being in the area is such a good thing to come back. And I love it. And our cast is loving the area so far.
Do you get to stay with your family while you're in town?
Yes.
Or? Well, that's nice.
I am staying with my family, so it's nice to be out of a hotel for
right.
a little while.
That's real nice. The production continues tonight,
mm-hmm.
and will run through Sunday.
That is correct.
All right. And where can people find out more about you?
More about me?
Yeah.
Twitter.
Yes.
You can tweet me at Tumbling Tucker, and then also SheldonTucker.net.
While you're upside down singing, you're not also sending out a tweet, right? That would be too much.
Not usually.
Okay.
I don't take my phone with me on
Okay.
stage.
Very good. Sheldon, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
We have time for a question today.
Okay.
Here's what we're going to give away today. Two movie passes to any area Malco movie theater, and two tickets that you'll pick up at Will Call for the next Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra concert, which is a week from this weekend.
Yes.
Okay. Very simple concept today. I'm going to give you a list of names, and I want people to tell me what this list of names represents.
Okay.
This is not an exclusive list. There are other names that would go on this list, but all of these names belong on this very specific list, and this is not something obscure.
Okay.
This list is not like the only baseball players to hit for the cycle in 1912 or anything like that.
Okay.
This is something we all know.
Okay.
Okay, here's the list. George Clinton, Elbridge Gerry, George M. Dallas, Hannibal Hamlin, Schuyler Colfax, William Wheeler, Levi P. Morton.
Okay. If you have a guess or if you know, give us a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 8th of February, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Elizabeth Bishop, born in Worcester, Massachusetts, 1911. Went to Vassar, wrote poetry there, and from her mentor, the poet Marianne Moore, she learned that she could write poems that were not about big ideas like love or death, but just about looking at objects. It's the birthday of John Grisham, born Jonesboro, Arkansas, 1955. He was a successful lawyer. He set out to write a novel about one of his court cases. It was called A Time to Kill. It came out in 1989, did not do well. John Grisham then read an article in Writer's Digest magazine about the rules of suspense, and he used that formula to write a thriller about a law student who realizes the firm that he works for is connected to the mafia. And that was The Firm, a huge bestseller in 1991. Kate Chopin, born in St. Louis, 1850, on this day. She came from a successful family. She was a young socialite, a Southern belle. She got married, had six children. She was a devoted wife and mother. But then her husband died, and then her mother died, and Kate Chopin was depressed. Her doctor encouraged her to write because she was a good letter writer. And so over a period of about 15 years, Kate Chopin wrote almost 100 short stories and two novels, At Fault and The Awakening, in 1899. It was The Awakening that caused a controversy at the time, the story of a woman who gives up being a wife and mother, has an affair, and walks into the sea, perhaps a suicide. It was heavily censored and criticized at the time, now considered an important work by an early feminist author, The Awakening. And it's the birthday of Neil Cassady, born in Salt Lake City, 1926. A con man in and out of jail, came to New York City, met Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg, who idolized him. To them, Neil Cassady embodied everything that they embraced in theory. Neil Cassady was the inspiration for the character Dean Moriarty, the hero of Jack Kerouac's On the Road. Allen Ginsberg wrote about him, and Neil Cassady appears in the Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test by Tom Wolfe as a friend of Ken Kesey's. Here's a poem for today by Paul Hostofsky entitled Exegesis. We couldn't have been more than 12 or 13 sitting on that green bench in the late 60s or early 70s, me and Michael Zucker, who was much more savvy and world-weary than I, when I asked him to please explain the meaning of the words to a song by Carly Simon, who was simply gorgeous, that much was plain,
after we'd resolved the essential question of whether or not she was wearing a bra in that photo of her with the blue top and thick lips on her album cover. "I don't get it," I said. "You're so vain, you probably think this song is about you, but the song is about him, isn't it?" I asked Zucker, holding my palm up in the air, like one who's trying to ascertain the truth about whether or not it has started to rain. Zucker looked away then, gingerly fingering the green slats, as though he were reading the carved names of the lovers and obscenities tactually. Then he took a deep breath and exhaled miserably, took the album cover out of my hands, and gazed a while at Carly Simon, who was gorgeous, famous, braless, and older than me and Zucker put together. "That's the point," he said. "She's in love with him." Exegesis, a poem by Paul Hostofsky from A Little in Love, A Lot, published by Main Street Rag, used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Okay, here's that list of people again. George Clinton, Elbridge Gerry, George M. Dallas, Hannibal Hamlin, Schuyler Colfax, William A. Wheeler, Levi P. Morton. Not an exclusive list. It's a partial list. Mm-hmm. There are other names that could go on this list, but they all belong on this list.
Any ideas? Don't know. Just they have an Arkansas town named after them or something.
Not a bad guess. Actually, it's even less obscure than that. They were all vice presidents of the United States of America. Seven of the 47 people who've been vice president. Honestly, if you had asked and I heard that list, I would not have known either.
And
all of them are at least 100 years ago. If we had a list 100 years from now that included, say, Walter Mondale and perhaps Nelson Rockefeller, people might not remember them 100 years from now. All right. Yeah. If we got any answers, they've gone into the Ceramic Cow, and we will pull out a winner for the two tickets to Malco Theater and the two tickets to the APO. Ozarks at Large and KUAF, supported by Arcega's Espresso Cafe, in business since 1992 and a proud sponsor of KUAF. Arcega's roast coffee beans from around the world at their warehouse off Martin Luther King Boulevard in Fayetteville. Information, cafe locations, and hours are available at arcegas.com. And support for KUAF also comes from Abbey Carpet and Floor, located at 2812 South Walton in Bentonville, 464-4411.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Wheeler.
Wheeler. Mm-hmm. Go out west on Weddington to get to Wheeler.
Yep.
They have a volunteer fire department. That's all I know about Wheeler. You're going to bring it on tonight.
I am. I'm really excited. Really excited. I'm a huge fan of the first movie for sure. So okay. I was thrilled. And then Tucker was, or Sheldon Tucker was great this morning. So I'm really excited.
I have a hard time watching cheerleading.
You should go though. I think it'll be worth it.
It scares me.
I know.
People going, it's the same thing with trapeze artists and bull riding.
Right.
Can't watch it.
Well,
I'm scared of what might happen.
Well, you're very thoughtful in that way, but these are trained professionals.
I know. And as he told us on the way out, they have a 30-minute stunt call, union demanded,
for safety.
So they run through that between 6:30 and 7 before they have their regular call.
Right.
So they're stretched and ready. And
there are things in place to help them and stuff. I think it'll be great fun. I'm really excited.
And Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at Fayetteville Public Library, another countdown conversation for the Tyco drumming that's coming to Walton Arts Center later this month.
Oh, yeah. I'm also excited about that. I'm excited about a lot of things, apparently.
and that's 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon, Walker Room, Fayetteville Public Library, free and open to the public.
Excellent.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a great Wednesday.